This is Countdown to Exegesis, your listen-along Steely Dan podventure. Join me, Andrew Souter.
And me, Ollie Piper, as we explore the Steely Dan discography track by misanthropic track. But wait, there's a twist, a gimmick, a delicious dash of jeopardy.
That's right, because while Ollie has the Steely Dan back catalogue tattooed on the soft side of his soul, I'm new to the Dan and would like to keep it that way.
This means Andrew is hearing every song for the first time. Will he love it? Will he hate it? Should I care? Let's find out.
Exegesis.
Countdown to Exegesis is a Patreon-supported podcast. Pledge just £3.50 a month to unlock bonus episodes and make our little hearts sing. Just visit patreon.com/countdowntoexegesis. Hello, and welcome to Countdown to Exegesis, your listen-along Steely Dan podventure. My name is Andrew Souter, and I'm joined as ever by Oliver Piper, a man who told me in confidence that Asia is, and I quote, the soundtrack to a dentist's waiting room in purgatory. Together, we're working our way through Steely Dan's fourth album, Katie Lied, and today are discussing track 8, Chain Lightning, frightening as it may seem. Now, Ollie, a point of business.
Yes, yes, yes.
Going forward, as we continue our listen-along podventure, is there a case to be made for skipping a song when it is just this boring?
I think we founded this podcast on a kind of male completionist foundation.
Yeah.
You know, there's something of that in it. There's also the sunk cost fallacy to contend with.
Yeah.
With those two things working in tandem, I don't think it would be right or proper to skip a song. I'm afraid. And anyway, light and shade helps you see the full picture, does it not? A wise man once said, if everything was light, you may as well just stare at a light bulb. You know what you said about me saying that Asia is the soundtrack to a dentist's waiting room in purgatory?
Yeah.
I can't tell if that's you having a dig at me and Steely Dan, or whether I actually said that, because that does sound like something that I might say. In a positive way.
Interesting. I'm not gonna reveal to you whether you said that or not. I'm just gonna leave it hanging.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it sounds a little cliche, but I could imagine saying that sort of 5 pints in, when we're at the pub with our mates, sitting around a table, and inevitably the two of us start discussing Steely Dan.
Yeah.
Much to the annoyance of ourselves.
Yeah, and not just ourselves.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, that was a given. The annoyance of everyone else was a given.
Yeah.
But hey, listeners, you are some of the select few people in the entire human population who enjoy joining us on these on these little voyages. Let's hope to whichever deity you look to that you don't enjoy Chain Lightning, because I sense there's a stench in the room. Of dislike between me and Andrew of this song. But we'll wait and see. We'll wait and see. I won't ruin the jeopardy completely. Would you like to know some song facts about this song?
Yeah.
Have we said what we're doing? Chain Lightning.
Chain Lightning. Eight, yeah.
Track 8 on Katie Lied. I don't have any. I don't have any song facts. Nobody in the history of recorded Dan... from the Library of Dan, there's no positive or interesting things to say about this song. It's track 8 on Katie Lied. I can tell you that. I can also tell you it was the B-side to the Bad Sneakers single, which is the second single off Katie Lied.
Mm.
And that's it.
Okay. Well, maybe we could approach it sideways. Approach it askance. What are your bottom five Steely Dan songs?
Ooh, hello.
You don't need a fully formed list of five, but maybe just throw out some of your least favourite Dan songs.
Chain Lightning.
Yeah, of course.
Is on there. The various tracks from Can't Buy a Thrill are on there. Various tracks from Side 2 of Pretzel Logic.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of stuff on like the three albums to come that are... Yeah, you know, they're a little bit turgid. I mean, one thing that I think, and I'm not sure how many people share this sentiment, but I'm just being completely straight and honest with you here, Andrew Souter. Dan albums have a tendency to peter out.
Don't all albums? Or like most albums are front-loaded, I would say.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. But like occasionally you come across like an absolute jewel where they're just master track listers. Like so many albums could be improved by just switching around a few songs.
Yeah.
It's like, don't put all your singles at the start. Spread them out.
Absolutely. You know. Absolutely.
No one wants to eat four puddings in a row before they even got to the roast beef, do they?
I suppose not. Maybe Jay Rayner, the food critic for The Observer.
or me, actually, on the right day.
Yeah. Well, look, Ollie, I had a feeling, I had a little inkling that we would find ourselves in this situation. That there would
have
be
you prepared some fun?
Well, I wouldn't say fun, but I did a bit of...
I wouldn't say prepared. Okay.
I did a little bit of homework this morning.
Okay.
So the guitarist on this track is Rick Derringer.
Yes. He plays a solo, at least. Yeah.
He plays a solo, and he was also on Showbiz Kids, doing the slidey goodness on Showbiz Kids.
So just a note on Rick Derringer, don't say anything bad about Rick Derringer, because it'd be really good to get him on the podcast. So
well, I've got...
pure positivity towards the Derringer, please.
Okay, well, maybe what I'll do is I'll read what I've prepared about Derringer in a positive tone of voice.
Sure, okay.
So nobody needs to know that I'm saying it in a scornful way.
Are you capable of this? Serious question.
What, of acting?
Of saying something scornful in a positive way.
Yeah, okay. Well, let me say some things that I... let me just give you a little potted history of Derringer, and then I'll get onto the thing that I'm really positive about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So Rick Derringer, he was a boy from Ohio. As a boy, he was really into Chet Atkins, James Burton, Les Paul, Wes Montgomery, the jazz guitarist. He was in the McCoys, the garage rock band, who had a song called Hang On Sloopy. Have you heard that song?
I've heard of it. Mm. Yeah, I know that name. Yeah. It's a bit girl groupy, or a bit, yeah, a bit bubblegummy.
Bubblegum, yeah. That's the word. Yeah. The guy loves to rock. He had a solo single called Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo. He hung out with Andy Warhol.
He loves to rock and hoochie coo.
Yeah. He hung out at the factory with Andy Warhol. He worked with Todd Rundgren. He plays guitar on a song that I genuinely love, Total Eclipse of the Heart by Bonnie Tyler.
That is a surprise to me.
Yeah, me too. This is what you find when you really, really dig into the Wikipedia page. Like really, really get your claws in. But I think possibly the best thing he did was write the music for Hulk Hogan's entrance in WWF
Excuse
fights.
Me? Okay, yeah. Yeah, okay.
And you can sort of see why he ended up in Steely Dan's Tractor Beam, because here's a kid who loves to rock. You know, he can wail, he can blow, he can whatever. But also he loves jazz. Yeah, he loves Wes, he loves all that shit.
The perfect marriage, yeah.
The perfect marriage of rock and jazz. And also, the song that he wrote for Hulk Hogan could be like Jeff Skunk Baxter's personal anthem. So it's called Real American, and the lyrics to the chorus go like this. And I think this is really quite well written. I am a real American, fight for the rights of every man. I am a real American, fight for what's right, fight for your life. Now, he was such a real American, still is, Rick Derringer, that he updated this song for an appearance on Alex Jones's radio show in 2017, shortly after the election of Donald Trump.
Okay, so I no longer want Rick Derringer on the podcast, so speak your truth.
This is what I thought. So Alex Jones is the guy, the mad conspiracy guy who said that the Sandy Hook shooting was some sort of like lib fiction. And then he got sued for defamation. Anyway, Rick Derringer went on his radio show and he updated Real American to include the line, best not mess with my US, which is quite good, I think. You know, it's got a nice sort of assonance. He's a big Trump supporter. And like I say, I think we've talked in the past about Steely Dan the musical. Not a real musical, but we've sort of daydreamed about what Steely Dan the musical could be.
Spitballed about, what it might look like,
Yeah, and all I'd say is check out Real American by Rick Derringer and just imagine that this is the entrance music for Jeff Skunk Baxter when he enters the scene. It fits perfectly.
Do I have to do that?
I think you'll enjoy it in a sort of masochistic way.
Oh, why are so many of these kind of old rock and rollers so bloody wrong-headed?
Yeah, it's sad, isn't it? It is sad.
Oh, I'm going to see Van Morrison in a couple of weeks.
Are you actually?
Yeah.
Because Van is a man gone wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was a very, very brief period where I thought, you know what? I don't know any late period Van. All I know is the 70s, like, heyday. I'm gonna check out some of this, like, late era stuff. So I bought a couple of, like, 90s Van albums. And I just sort of had a moment where I thought, like...
Why do you do this?
Well, why do I do it? But also, like, this is the... Astral Weeks, Moondance, all those early albums, they are beloved by dads, but they're also beloved by men with handlebar moustaches and unicycles who work as baristas in East London.
Mm-hmm.
90s Van, like, the demographic has dwindled.
You've just described Steely Dan, by the way, but fine.
But this is what I mean is, like, 90s Van would be 10 tracks of whack. It's like nobody is listening to this music apart from dads. And that's fine. You know, that's the direction we're heading in, you know, fertility permitting. But I don't want to be spending my time listening to music that is solely created and released for dads. You know what I mean?
I think I know what you mean, but you've just described, like, you have a habit or a weird kink.
Mm.
To, like, seek out late-era albums by, like, tired artists.
Sure.
Like, there is truth in the maxim that, like, people do their best stuff early on. And it's not always true.
So
I can understand, like, digging for gems or whatever, but sort of 80 to 90% of the time, it's true. And if you're looking at a kind of, like... If you're looking at an artist that had their heyday in the 70s... By 1988, they're going to be wank 80% of the time.
Yeah.
And yet, you go out and seek late era Joni Mitchell, which proved to me actually is quite good.
Yeah, really good.
Late era David Crosby, late era Bob Dylan, late era fucking Van Morrison. And then you have the temerity to complain about it.
Yeah, well, I'm very confused. But
absolute madness.
Well, it's not complete madness because. Dylan and Mitchell, some of their best stuff is post-1988. So the principle is, like, let's not believe the official narrative handed down to us by Mojo magazine. Let's find out for ourselves. But then when you go on that journey, you do end up staring at yourself in a mirror at 2 a.m. thinking, you know, I could be doing anything. And I'm listening to Enlightenment by Van Morrison.
Do you think you apply that... that approach to anything else in life? It just seems like it seems noble in a way, right? You're willingly banging your head against a subject in the hope that next time it won't make a lump, you know. And occasionally it doesn't. Occasionally it knocks you out and you go on a little journey, right? But you know, is it worth it?
Are you describing the podcast? Just,
I wasn't intentionally, but now that you mention it.
I mean, you know.
Oh, God, yeah. that was the id talking, wasn't it? Jesus Christ, I had no idea I was actively describing this purgatory we'd fashioned for ourselves.
Yeah. What's your vibe, Ollie?
I was going to say, are we avoiding talking about Chain Lightning?
I know I am. Avoid
things. Okay, my vibe is... A stodgy cake with beautiful frosting.
That's nice. So, style over substance.
I think it has a lot of detail. It's like you've got this beautiful cake, and it's like got a, it's got like a Disney princess on it. A very, absolutely like picture perfect. But then the cake is flavoured with old boots and poo.
Yeah. So what frosting are you thinking about? Because I don't even... I mean, it's a nice-sounding song, broadly speaking, but...
I think we'll get onto that, but I think it's a very detail oriented song, and it's quite a looking if you had the charts in front of you and a beard to stroke, you know, you might have a good
time. I am literally stroking my beard as we speak.
Yeah. That's all I'll say. You know, it's a technical accomplishment, but the base layer, the sponge is poo flavored.
Yeah. So maybe it's like a frittata where the top layer is beautifully browned, and then you cut into it and it's all got stuck to the pan. I made a frittata today, so this is a metaphor from my own heart.
That's an eggy thing, right?
Yeah, it's basically like veg covered in egg.
Yeah. Sounds quite hard to get wrong, but...
I managed.
But anyway, say what you like about Andrew. He's really good at failing consistently. What is your vibe?
Come on now. My vibe is... That'll do, Rick. Now, this is a pun on a phrase which I'd never heard before I met you. So you...
Oh, yes. Yeah,
semi-regularly say, that'll do, pig, which is a quote from the movie Babe. If our listeners haven't seen Babe, it's a film about a silent talking... It's about pigs.
Do you know what's really weird about my use of this phrase is that I haven't seen the movie Babe.
Right. I don't know
how or why I've picked it up, but yeah, the farmer says it in the closing moments. I believe, and it's a bit of, for some reason, it's a bit of a tear jerking thing. But
he looks down at Babe the pig and says, "That'll do, pig. That'll do."
Mm. Anyway, reading into your vibe, you're not a fan of the solo.
Well, it's more just in general. I feel there's a that'll do vibe to this song. Like, as you say, it's technically accomplished, but it just feels like pure filler. And they've just been like,
I don't think you should.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
That'll do. Really.
Like an iced brick, like a frosted brick.
Sure.
Taking my analogy and mixing it with yours. I wouldn't blame Rick, though.
No, not me. I was just hunting for a pun.
Sure. That's fine. I understand that, and I sympathise. I'd just like to point out, I mean, maybe as a neat segue into the music section, I actually think Rick Derringer's solo is just about the best thing about this song. It's cool. As I was saying, Rick Derringer's solo has feel,
yeah.
Unlike the rest of the song, it has soul. Unlike the rest of the song, this is perhaps Donald Fagen's favourite solo in the whole oeuvre of Steely Dan.
Really?
He said in an interview, "I'm very fond of Rick Derringer's solo on Chain Lightning," and Walter said, "I never liked that one that much." And Donald said, I'm sure Rick will be glad to read that. So that happened. Also, I just typed Rick Derringer into Google, and you know it has the suggested questions.
Yeah.
Did Rick Derringer play with Steely Dan? Fair question. Yes, he did. How old is Rick Derringer now? Fair question. People like to know personal details.
80.
What genre is Rick Derringer? The man. Sorry, I find that funny, but it makes total sense when I actually say it out loud. I just enjoyed, like, what genre of human being is Rick Derringer? There's a song to talk about. On drums, Jeff Porcaro. On bass, Wilton Felder.
Good old Wilton.
Really using his talents to the max here.
I've said this before, but Wilton Felder is on "I Want You Back" by Jackson 5.
Yeah. Good bass player. Rose piano, Michael O'Martian, old friend of the show, Michael O'Martian.
Mm-hmm.
Vocals, obviously, Donald Fagen. Guitar, it's listed as Rick Derringer. I think he only plays the solo. The licks, to me, sound very Becker-esque.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know if you agree. You have no opinion or care in the world, do you?
Well, I thought the solo was Becker.
Did you?
Yeah, I thought it was like a less scuzzy Becker. Because I think I've said already, I like Becker's solos on this album because they sound kind of a bit loose. I know you think I fetishise really? Looseness. Yeah, he's on Black Friday and one of the other ones, isn't he?
I just thought you described him as, you know, like someone's guitar student. Maybe that was on a Patreon episode.
I think that was a demo, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, I like Becker. I mean, Becker's playing.
Okay, good, good, good. Yeah. Well, I can take or leave it, really. Depends on the song, but I do think that the main licks are probably Walter, and I have seen people talk about Walter's playing on this song. Mm. So I assume that's that. The song, what do you like about it, Andrew?
What do I like about it? That's a really good question.
what's your favourite thing and least favourite thing, and then I'll do mine.
My favourite thing is the beginning of I would say there are two sections to this song.
Mm.
There's the intro. There's three. Mm-hmm. There's the intro, there's the verse, there's the solo, and then the verse comes back.
Yeah.
I would say when each of those three bits begins, I'm on board. You know, like it's a nice, I quite like the first sort of second or two of each of those sections. And then gradually a sort of malaise sets in. But, you know, I'll say it again in different words. The first second or two of each section is quite enjoyable.
Mm.
But to be honest,
promise.
Yeah, I see this as more like, you know, when you realise that something wasn't as bad as you thought it was because you've now plumbed greater depths.
Mm-hmm.
This is making me sort of
You like Pretzel Logic now?
Yeah, I think Side 2 of Pretzel Logic has some really good ideas. Because the thing is, so
I meant Pretzel Logic the song, actually.
Oh, okay. No, I still don't like that. But when we were doing Side 2 of Pretzel Logic, I think we were both finding it a bit of a slog. Ooh. And my sort of repeated criticism was that there were too many like genre exercises. So it felt like they were writing in particular styles in order to pad out the album.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
God, give me a genre exercise at this point. Like, if we'd gone Your Gold Teeth and now it was some fucking Dixieland spoof.
I mean, this kind of it. Okay, I've got two things to say. This one, this kind of is a genre exercise.
Yeah, but it's one we've heard before. This is Pretzel Logic, yeah. the title track. It's also what's that other boring one they do? I can't even remember.
Black Friday.
Black Friday. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. But Black Friday is a good one. This is just a retread of Pretzel Logic, and Pretzel Logic, let's be honest, isn't that interesting of a song to begin with. But anyway, the other thing I have to say is, are you seriously like sick of this album already? For one, the quality, I think you would agree, has been quite consistent through this album. It is on some days my favourite Steely Dan album.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, we've recorded this series at a pace of a snail's pace.
Yeah.
You know, you can't possibly have been bored of it. You've got plenty of other songs. You've basically had to think about a Steely Dan song once every 3 weeks or longer.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. I just mean, you know, we did Your Gold Teeth too.
Yeah, great tune.
It's okay. And then, you know, what's next? What's next from the Dan boys? And then you sit down and it's this fucking song. Like, at this point, any of the weird extravagances of Pretzel Logic Side 2 would be welcome, is all I'm saying.
Mm. Well, you know, like you say, sometimes you need to plumb greater depths to see what you've been given, to appreciate your lot.
Yeah.
You know. So I thought what we could do with this song, actually, is do some proper, deep musical analysis.
Mm-hmm.
We often shy away from that and just end up talking about sort of tipping practices and what Skunk has on his bacon and things like that, right?
Maple syrup.
Oh, it's too Canadian though. But I thought let's actually do some musical analysis here. You're a trained jazz fart or something.
Yeah.
So I actually emailed Donald Fagan and asked him to kind of send the chords over, and he very kindly did.
That's nice.
Yeah. So if you want to just play the file, the first file in the chat, you'll hear Donald Fagan talking us through the chords. Very, very nice of him. He's an absolute star, absolute gentleman, turns out. He wasn't interested in coming on the podcast, but...
Well, he has come on the podcast.
And he did block me, actually, immediately after he sent this email. But he also sent the audio file, so you know, I've got to give him props for that.
Oh, well, I'm very... very interested. Okay, here we go.
I'll just call out the chords. A. Another A7, essentially. There's a C bass. D11. G major. 7. D7. E.
Wow, he has got a subtle touch.
So yeah, there we go, from the mouth of the man himself, from the mouth and fingers of the Fagan. I should add as a disclaimer that I haven't had no contact with Donald Fagan. That is a clip from the amazing Donald Fagan Teaches Piano video VHS tape.
You surprised me.
Which is floating around YouTube. Listeners, if you haven't seen it, it's well worth a watch. Not because it's funny or anything. It's not like inherently funny or anything like that. It's just an interesting cultural artifact. But we'll put that in the show notes to listen to. But yeah, some interesting chords going on there. You could say it was a kind of altered blues.
Can I tell you something? I've literally written in my notes for this episode, don't say altered blues.
Yeah.
Because that's what I say every single time in a kind of disparaging way.
In doing research in this episode, trying to find any facts about this song, all I saw were like journalists saying, oh, the altered blues, Chain Lightning. It is an altered blues. Yes, there's some interesting chord stuff going on. I love it when Steely Dan do interesting chord stuff going on. It's the whole premise of my argument and basically the whole reason for you being here is it's like, oh, listen to this band. They've got great chords. However, as per my cake analogy, it's like, yeah, you've added some lovely sprinkles to this blues. However, Dudes Vamping Blues is Dudes Vamping Blues is Dudes Vamping Blues, you know.
Can I be predictable?
It doesn't tickle my rod. Go on.
Have you heard Centrepiece by Joni Mitchell?
Yeah, I have. Yeah.
So, you know, it's like some old jazz standard. So it's part of a medley of an original Joni Mitchell song called Harry's House, and then it goes into Centrepiece, which is like a jazz cover. And
you're my centrepiece. Something like that.
Yeah. And it's got a choir of Joanies. We've got a choir of Dons here. Basically, I think that I always say that Steely Dan are doing an altered blues in a disparaging way. Mm. But actually, Joni does it semi-regularly, and I love it. So, in other words, these are kind of Joni chords in a way. I can totally imagine her singing this song. Mm. But the big difference would be that she would be singing this song.
I don't know that would make a difference for me, really. Joni kind of wrestles something different from the blues.
Mm.
You know, when she does the blues, it's all kind of sinewy and snake-like and slippery and in a good way, you know.
Mm.
And when Steely Dan do the blues, it's like it's just men in big shoes stomping around, isn't it? Sometimes, because I do like Black Friday, and I do like Bodhisattva, and I do like Josie, forgot the name, and I do like, you know, I don't instantly hate Steely Dan doing blues. I'd like to make that clear. Like, I'm not like, blues is boring, get me some fucking Razor Boy, right? No. However, this is probably the nadir of Steely Dan doing blues, I would say. In the whole catalogue. Jesus Christ, you know.
Yeah.
Put fucking Mr. Sam on the album in place of this. Mr. Sam never made the album. Mr. Sam's a really great, interesting demo. We'll be talking about that for the next Patreon episode, Andrew, whether you like it or not. Although by the time people hear this, it'll probably be like 3 Patreon episodes ago. But anyway, we're going to do a Patreon episode about it. It could have slotted in quite nicely and it would have brightened up the little run of songs we have here, which, you know.
But it sounds like, you know, Fagan talks us through the chords on his Piano Man tutorial thing. That suggests that he's fond of this song, and also he says that the Derringer solo is great. So maybe this is an example of just, I can't think of a good example, but occasionally you'll get it where an artist valorizes a song which most people don't really like.
Because I think people do like this song, and I think we're maybe not in a minority, but I think this song does have its defenders. Secondly, it is just typical of an artist writing something like interesting on an intellectual level. This song is doing interesting things. Like there's these melodies and harmonies that kind of stay the same or just slightly adjust as these chords kind of move underneath it, and it's like, oh, okay, yeah. From a kind of mathematical perspective, if I got a bloody blackboard and did the charts, I'd be like, oh, yeah. So actually, what was a third becomes a second over that one, and then it's kind of he's playing a major, but there's a minor sixth in there because implied by the harmony and stuff like that. I'd be like, oh yeah, okay. But I'm not going to get a blackboard. I want a song that I can tap my feet to. And when Steely Dan do it well, they hit both things. You know, they hit the cerebral and they hit the ped, whatever the Latin for foot is. Right, they're hitting both. Right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I was going to go like pederastal, but that's a whole different kettle of abuse. Right. So what I was getting to is saying, like, yes, I can see how an artist would be extra fond of a song because they know the ingredients that went into it and they know how bloody clever it is. And I'm sure I've been guilty of doing that with probably almost every song I've ever written.
Yeah.
This is more interesting than it is because... because I know that I did something clever there.
Because it came from my big clever brain.
Well,
also, I guess he was in the room, I assume, when Derringer laid down that filthy, filthy solo. So he's probably got happy memories of, you know, it was the summer of 74 and Derringer came in and he played a blinder, kind of all that business, you know.
Yeah. At least he's got one happy memory.
Yeah. I thought he had happy memories of sheltering from nuclear fallout or something.
That is true, yeah. He does have a whole album. Not about sheltering, but there are mentions of shelters, yeah.
Mm. What is...
getting it on in a shelter, in fact.
Really?
With an interesting lady who likes jazz.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Goodness me. Well, I can't wait for that.
It's getting tense here in the story room. Dean Stevenson has been kidnapped. Meanwhile, his sister Kat has a cunning plan to undo the civilization buggering damage wrought by her boss, Edmund Beryl.
Part 8. Chain Lightning. Kat knew Benton Tusk was her best chance, so she opened Edmund's weekly itinerary to see if there was a visit planned. Benton apparently was coming tomorrow, so this was going to be a bit rushed. A day later, Benton was admiring Edmund's roses while Kat was in Edmund's bedroom looking for the handgun she figured he kept under his bed. She then went downstairs to the basement, taking the lift that Edmund thought only he knew about, and started a small trash fire to keep the staff occupied. She narrowly caught Benton Tusk being walked around by Edmund Beryl, right as Edmund was opening the front door. Benton's chopper was already warming up. Kat wouldn't have much time. Mr. Tusk? He turned around as though deigning to speak to her was the equivalent of granting an audience with God himself. Yes? Can you come with me? I need some help with our servers, and my IT specialist has the day off. Jason is out today? Asked Edmund. Kat knew he meant Javier, and that Javier had been mistakenly told it was a holiday to celebrate the fact that Mr. Beryl had created a new world order. But all she said was, Indeed, sir. Benton threw up his hands. I suppose there's nothing for it. Kat knew that Benton Tusk had likely agreed to help her because he figured he had a certain percentage shot to assault her and get away with it. Which is why she didn't feel bad when, once alone in the room where the gray men meet, in the glow of a laptop, with a cocksure grin painted on Benton's dumb face, she pulled out a gun. Benton's grin faded. Edmund! He shouted. Kat brought the nose of the gun close to Benton's cheek. He slowly raised his hands. He can't hear you, Mr. Tusk. You're the idiot who said we needed to soundproof this room. He narrowed his eyes. You don't have the balls to pull the trigger. What a cliche, you asshole. She kicked him in the balls. He kneeled over and writhed in pain. She pointed the gun to the computer, where she pulled up the files for the blockchain software. When you're quite finished, you're going to teach me how to read this shit. She sat in the chair to wait. A few minutes before they started, Marianne came in to deliver a message. Marianne started to speak, and then grimaced at the mass of pain, squirming and crying. What, you kick him in the balls or something? Kat shrugged. Or something. Marianne nodded. They found him.
Oh, you look like you've been in a broom cupboard with a lady.
Do I?
Yeah, you just got a bit of a ravishing.
Oh yeah.
Oh, there we go. Mm-hmm. Back to normal. It's quite handsome, really. You look like a sort of Love Actually extra,
like an emo man, like this.
Sort of. More of a Hugh Grant sort of look.
Yeah, actual. Yeah. Well, that was a wonderful, think about a wonderful experience. But I must get back to my podcast. Imagine.
And if you subscribe to our Patreon, you'll hear all the juicy audio from Andrew's lapel mic.
Yeah. Sorry to keep you waiting. He insisted on dragging out the music section. Anyway, let's get to it.
Is that what you call it, the music section? Anyway, the lyrics. Mm. I know what this song is about.
Do you? Can I make some guesses?
You go ahead. I just want you to just rhapsodize. What do you think this song is about?
I've got two possibilities. I've got three possibilities. Mm. One.
Let's hear him.
Ponzi schemes. Two.
Ah.
The Church of Scientology. Three. Mm. The hippie movement.
Oh, okay.
That's all
I've got. Tell me more about the Ponzi scheme theory.
So, the opening couplet of the song seems to be about somebody who either has or is promising great wealth.
Some turn out $100,000.
Like, ooh, that's like
that's
like,
some
ooh,
turnout.
Look how much money we've made. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Some, ooh, or some people turn out as much as $100,000.
Yeah, nice little play on words. Get with it. Yeah, we'll shake his hand.
That's what the song was about. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Get with it. We'll shake his hand. Get with it. Both means join the movement. Get on board with this man with a load of money, or it could mean like get with it, like. Get on board the fashion wagon. Mm. We'll shake his hand.
Don't bother to understand.
Don't ask any questions. There's money coming your way. There's money coming down the pipe.
Don't question the little man.
I don't know. Don't give a shit about poor people because you're about to get rich.
Be part of the brotherhood.
This is a community. It's not a scam. It's about being part of some capitalist endeavor.
Yes, it's chain lightning. It feels so good.
You know, chain lightning is quite exciting when you see it zig and zag across a night sky. Instrumental break, guitar solo. Rick Derringer embodies the spirit of
Ponzi schemes.
Of Ponzi schemes, exactly. Then everybody's been rinsed, so we're back to the world of Black Friday, where the big investor man goes to Australia and feeds the kangaroos while people are chucking themselves out of buildings. But here, the people who've been made false promises to, they're trying to pretend. They're playing it cool.
Hush, brother. We cross the square. Act natural, like you don't care.
So they're being nonchalant and pretending that they haven't just got burnt by Mr. Ponzi and his big scheme.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I thought it was Hush, brother. I thought that was the architects of the scheme stealing away in the night.
Yeah. Oh, that's yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's a more interesting interpretation than what the song is actually about. But I'm afraid that is wrong. Scientology, I guess, brotherhood feels good to be part of something.
Yeah.
There's some sort of charismatic leader.
Yeah.
At the helm. Yeah. Okay. And what was the third one?
The hippie movement.
The hippie movement. Yeah, that's interesting.
Just because of don't question
Charles Manson.
Yeah, I don't know, just some sort of cult leader who...
He was quite a little man, wasn't he?
Was he?
Well, I don't know, actually. I just made that up for the sake of...
Right.
Rolling along.
Yeah. Well, you know, be part of the Brotherhood. That's a sort of hippie vibe, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all I've got. What's
Charles Manson was 1.57 metres. He has been listed as 5'2". But they're saying some things say that isn't actually true. So yes, he was a short man.
Of course.
In any sense. But all of those interpretations are wrong. But you are on the right lines.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one of the...
I want to guess it now.
Oh, okay.
Can you give me a clue?
I'll tell you that some turnout 100 grand is talking about volume of people, not about volume of cash or anything else.
Is it about the Nazi Party?
Yes! Bing, 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 bing!
Mm-hmm.
Yes, this, from Fagan's mouth, that song was about a couple of guys going to a fascist rally. We had the Berchtesgaden in mind. And then remembering it 40 years later, we almost inserted a spoken part before the last verse saying, 40 years later. That might have made it clearer. Can you imagine they'd done that? Fucking amazing. So yeah, they're 100 grand. They're at this Nazi rally. Get with it. We'll shake his hand. Oh, we might even get to meet Hitler. Don't bother to understand. Don't question the little man, Hitler. Be part of the Brotherhood. The Nazis.
Oh, the little man is Hitler. I see.
Yeah, and then when they come back, hush, brother, we cross the square. Act natural, like you don't care. They are. Some places say they're meeting in a. Some sources say they're meeting in a Uruguayan square. To mark the 40th anniversary of Hitler's rise to power. I think it's more likely they're visiting the square where,
well, yeah, where, it where says, they were 40 years ago. It literally says, yeah. We're standing just where we
where
standing he stood.
Where he stood, yeah.
Who are these people?
but The Guardian, to put it that way. Some also say that the chain lightning is a reference to the SS symbol with two S's. Looking like lightning bolts.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I thought you were going to say...
It could also be the, the lightning-like excitement that comes from being part of a group of bastards.
Yeah. I mean, that's the line I don't like in this song, now that I know it's about the Nazis. I find the line, don't bother to understand, condescending and irritating, because it implies that
to
people...
Nazis. To Nazis. Condescending to Nazis.
Yeah, I think we should treat them with a bit more respect. No, but I mean, most people who were involved in the Nazi Party, I mean, as supporters, ground-level supporters, were either doing it... They were either keeping their head down out of fear, or they actively believed it. So it's not that they didn't understand. It's that they understood what was being said, and they decided that it was for the best. It just seems like a sort of sneery... Like, oh, these fucking idiots in the crowd, they're just getting whipped up by the demagoguery.
This is one issue that I have with this song, is that I think they have nothing but sustain for the Nazis, as you'd hope. There's lots of digs in there. Don't bother to understand. They're unquestioning sheep. Don't question a little man. Hitler was a pathetic loser. This is an absolutely Nazi-hating song. Good. However, yes, like you say, it almost undermines the seriousness of fascism.
Yeah.
It's almost forgiving, and I don't think that was intentional, but it's almost forgiving to the people who are involved in this, like, either saying, oh, they're basically a bit too stupid to know what's going on, or this is where it gets really troublesome, is that it's like being part of the Brotherhood, yes, it's chain lightning, you know, it feels so good. It sounds like they're describing the excitement of smoking crack.
Or going to Woodstock.
Yeah, and it's like that, it's almost implying that people join fascist movements because of the sense of belonging more than anything else.
Yeah.
Like it's much about belonging as it is exclusion. Now, I think that's probably true to an extent. Like, a lot of old Nazis, a lot of neo-Nazis have said, oh, I just wanted to belong to a group. However, I also think that's a very convenient excuse for those sorts of people.
Yeah, to come absolutely. Out with yeah, yeah.
After the fact. So it's a little bit troublesome. I think this song's heart is in the right place, and that place being Nazis are a fucking pond scum.
Yeah.
However, yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure it goes.
But most Nazi right supporters way. Weren't pond scum. Most Nazi supporters, as in most the people, like if Birmingham became a Nazi enclave, and we ended up going to rallies because we were terrified of the consequences if we didn't, that doesn't make us pond scum. It just makes us swept up in situations beyond our control.
Yeah. However, the subjects of this song go back and relive it 40 years later, so they. They at least are absolute pond scum.
But are they, or are they not just in the place? They're just in the same place. Like, they're not necessarily revisiting the rally. They're just.
It sounds deliberate. Like, these two people haven't just. They're saying, "Hush, brother, across the square at midnight, combing their hair, trying to look natural." It doesn't sound like they've just wandered there from Tesco, you know.
I mean, before I say this, I just want to clarify that I don't think there's a clear similarity to be drawn between the Nazi Party and voters of the Conservative Party in the UK. But you know how, like, or people who voted to leave the EU.
Okay.
Clearly, we've got a different magnitude of ideology. But one thing that really irritates me is the way that people usually on the left, talk about people who vote for the Conservatives and who vote for Leave as sort of poor sheep who are lost in the woods, and they're just sort of like dazzled by the oratory. And I just think, like, I think a lot of people know exactly what they're voting for because they believe it. Like, maybe they're not in possession of all the facts, but then most people aren't in possession of all the facts. And it's just a view of, like, the public which I find really irritating, which is to say, like, essentially people don't understand what they're getting in for. I think a lot of people, a lot of the time, know what they're getting in for.
I think we talked about this before, specifically in relation to, like, class and how a lot of certain corners of the media and the public act like the working class have no agency.
Like
they are just bleating sheep going to the next, following the next populist beacon, you know.
And all we need to do is go to their doorstep.
It's both insultingly simplified and, like, also giving racists a get out of jail free card, which they're not allowed. You know, they shouldn't be given. So, hey ho.
Yeah. Just to clarify one more time, because it might get lost in the edit, I don't think there is a similarity between supporters of the Third Reich and people who voted to leave the European Union. I think there's a very different thing.
Passing resemblance.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't really have anything else to say about the lyrics. They're quite scant, aren't they?
They're quite scant, yeah. I do think they've
It's a verse, a boogie, and a verse.
Yeah. I do quite like the. I think they're musical lyrics, as in they're rhythmically composed, aren't they? Hush, brother, we cross the square. You know, it all fits.
Yeah, you like it when they choose words that sound good in the right places.
Yeah,
said before. Yeah, Yeah, I'm not belittling that. It's a skill to do that, and
yeah,
they got a good sense of lexical musicality.
Yeah,
you might say. Okay. Well, in that case, do you want to hear my show and tell?
Oh, please.
Yeah. Okay. So, I struggled a bit for a show and tell for this song. Obviously, you know, it's a it's tricky subject matter and all the rest of it. I'm hardly going to do an audio play about Nazism or anything like that.
Mm.
So I thought, why not keep it simple and literally just record a little cover, just me and a guitar.
You know,
it's quite a big thing for me because I don't like my voice. I don't like people hearing me sort of sing and stuff. But I thought, you know, in the spirit of us reaching the end of series 4, I thought I'd put a bit of my heart on the table. But I did it, and it didn't turn out that good. You know, I wasn't that happy with it. So I thought, for a laugh, you know, this is a song about Nazis, about evil stuff, right?
Mm.
And you're aware of the concept of, like, backmasking.
Yeah.
Where you play heavy metal songs about the devil backwards, and then it'll tell you there's, like, a chimp in your tool shed who has Satan's number on his...
Yeah.
Tattooed on its buttock or whatever. So I thought, for a laugh... I'll stick the files in Audacity and I'll reverse it and I'll see if anything fun kind of comes up. Like,
okay.
You know, maybe I'll trick myself into hearing something that isn't there and then it'll be a bit of a laugh.
Yeah.
Fucking seriously, Andrew Suter. Mm. Like, I can hear stuff in this.
Wow.
Now, do you want to just give it a listen?
Sure. I think that's the best way to do it. Yeah, yeah.
See if you can hear the same things I do.
Okay.
Ready?
Yeah.
3, 2, 1, play.
I mean, that's clearly you.
No, I'm saying, well, I didn't want to play for Steely Dan's original, so it's my version.
Oh, I see.
Reversed. Yeah. Could you make anything out in that?
I did make out the word Steely Dan.
Yeah. I mean, it sounded a lot to me like it was saying this. it sounded to me like it was saying, Suter, Steely Dan owns your soul. Your soul is Dan. Fagan is your daddy now. I swear to God.
Okay, let's hear that again.
I swear to God. Do you want to write that down?
So, Suter.
Suter, Steely Dan owns your soul. Your soul is Dan. Fagan is your daddy now.
Okay, here we go.
Suter, Steely Dan owns your soul is Dan. Fagan is your daddy now.
I can confirm that the same thing happens on the recorded version, but obviously we can't play Steely Dan's recorded music on this podcast, even in backmasked form.
Wow.
But yeah, that's creepy, isn't it?
That is. I felt a chill go down my spine.
It's creepy. I mean, obviously, it's just a trick of the mind.
Mm.
They would not have hidden personal messages to you.
That would be odd.
About you, about the trials and tribulations of your podcast career. you know, in advance. Of course, they couldn't do that. They're not Nostradamus, right? But I just think it's a testament to the malleability of the human mind. Isn't it crazy?
Yeah, truly crazy. And I think what we need to do is not to take this we need to not take this on face value, because if we do, I'm going to be playing all of the records backwards and looking for hidden messages and going insane.
Slam or scam.
The most predictable slam or scam in Countdown to Exegesis history, although I'm already looking at Andrew and thinking he's going to do a rug pulling exercise on me. Like, actually, what I've been saving about this song is that it's a fucking banger. I loved every second of it. Yes, it may be a turgid blues, but turgid blues are my steak and chips. I love it. I'm a big Steely Dan fan now. God, who'd have thought it?
I think if this was my turning point, you would be annoyed.
Yeah, exactly. That's why you manufacture this.
No, I'm not manufacturing anything. I think this is a really boring song, and I think it is a clear scam.
Mm-hmm.
How about you?
Mm-hmm. No elaboration needed.
No elaboration needed. I've been squeezing the tiniest lemon for the past 2 hours. I've got nothing to say.
I mean, it says I don't know what you're referring to because we've only been recording for an hour and a half. But you know, listeners can fill in the gaps. I think this song is a royal scam.
Yeah, I thought you might. I
can see why people like it. And it does have some redeeming qualities, but those redeeming qualities cannot overcome the stench of tedium that emanates from Chain Lightning. Sorry, Chain Lightning fans, that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
And now confirmed by the deep analytical process through which we exegete. So,
yeah.
Sorry.
Well, it's been a pleasure as always. Not the song, but the exegesis has been enjoyable.
Yes, thank you, Andrew, for being here. Thank you, listeners, for sticking with us, and see you next week for Any World That I'm Welcome To.
See you then.